This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is just about 6:46 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Kelvin and Hezril. Our next story is actually about a report on fraud and corruption because PwC just released the Malaysian report of the Global Economic Crime and Fraud Survey.
Yeah, so the survey looked into things like who commits these crimes and whether or not companies here have the right frameworks to combat them. One of the concerns that the report mentions is whether or not employees feel there's a safe space to report them, especially when those who are guilty come from senior level management positions.
So this report identifies several ways in which companies can strengthen their approach in fighting fraud and corruption, of course highlighting the fact that tech can be involved to help solve some of these issues that perhaps companies face in fighting against corruption.
So that's one of the things that I found interesting was this idea of the fact that there has been it's like we're doing well, but we're not doing well enough. I think that was the overall takeaway. The fact that the numbers haven't gone up is great, but the levels that they are at remain not fantastic. So I think there is this question about whether how long it will take for institutional change to actually happen, or at least that's how it is. That's what I was thinking about listening to you, Hezril, talking about employees and how they relate to senior management and whether or not there is a company culture that allows for that sort of reporting. And I think all of that speaks to, how long it can actually take for long-term change to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot, like you said, it's a lot to do with the environment and relationships. But, another perspective I sort of was just thinking about was, when this new Malaysia after GE14, this sort of conversation about needing to shift our standards from, we're better than we were before to let's set the bar really high and see where we can go instead of trying to compare it, to something previous, and say, we're doing better. So we're fine now.
So joining us on the line to take us through the report is Alex Tan, Forensics and Risk Leader at PwC Malaysia. Alex, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Lynn and team. How are you?
Good, thank you. So firstly, can you walk us through how the data in the report was obtained?
Okay, we collected the data about 6 months ago, we contacted a number of organizations in Malaysia, and we essentially looked at people probably closer to the top of the tree, board members, C-suite level, head of internal audit, who should have some level of understanding of what's going on in their organization. Or if they don't, that may tell a story in itself about is information flowing up the tree. So we collected it about, 4 to 6 months ago, and we've been crunching the numbers since then, and today released our report, and globally we've released a global report as well.
What are the kinds of fraud and economic crimes that are most prevalent, according to the report, and who is most guilty of committing these crimes?
So the top four essentially are what we call asset misappropriation, or that's another word of, I suppose, saying stealing the money, bribery and corruption, which I presume you're fairly interested in, customer fraud, which is actually the highest fraud that we see, individual type of fraud, and of course our good friend cybercrime, which has been rising steadily. For Malaysia, when we asked the question, if you suffered from fraud, et cetera, who committed it? Was it an internal person, an external person, or a combination of the both, collusion? And it came out the highest being collusion at 35%. Whereas when we looked at, we're benchmarking, let's look around our neighbors, the rest of Southeast Asia, where we were 35% for collusion, they were 21%. So there's a higher incidence of collusion, according to our respondents here, than the rest of Southeast Asia.
Based on the findings of the survey, do most companies have strong frameworks in place to take action against fraud and corruption?
Yes and no. How's that for an answer, almost sitting on the fence? From what we're seeing, yes, some of them do. But there are others who don't. And if we look at, let's take corruption as a whole, because I think, you know, we have the MACC Amendment Act coming, Section 17A coming in a couple of months' time. So we asked a specific question around, you know, do you have a specific program designed to deal with corruption and bribery? And surprising or disappointingly for us, it came out that only 49% did, which meant 51% either didn't or they didn't know if they had one. And when you consider that we ask people who are fairly senior this question, if they didn't know they had one, then it's almost like not having one. And with the MACC amendment coming in, that number should be close to 100% saying that that they do have a program. And we also asked the question, you know, do you conduct risk assessments? And again, that number wasn't terribly brilliant. And when we asked about cybercrime, only 45% had a program designed for cybercrime. And of course, cyber's been in the news quite a bit lately.
So we spoke earlier about the fact that the report really highlighted the importance of technology when it comes to trying to deal with this. Can you talk to us about that? I mean, how does the use of technology like AI, for example, come into the picture when it comes to fighting corruption and fraud?
Yeah, so you know, when you're fighting corruption and fraud, there's no one solution. Otherwise, I'd be out of a job, and there'd be no fraud and corruption in this world. It's a mixture of technology, policies and processes, and a good old sniff test from a human being as well. But technology is helping more and more now, where you can use AI, so machine learning, looking through. Just a very simple example, using analytics to crunch all the numbers for payments going out. Are there any patterns there? Are there any patterns that can be, that machine learning can identify, you know, by weeding out the false positives? And we asked our respondents for Malaysia, you know, do you plan to use AI in the future? And 59% said, well, either we had no plans to, or we didn't know if they did have a plan to. You know, and just when we asked about more broadly about technology, not just AI, and we said, you know, do you plan to implement or upgrade technology to combat fraud and corruption? And there only about 64-65% said they did. So there is a space to play. And of course, we asked them, obviously, the next question is, why is it that, what's preventing you? And two factors came out there. One is cost, obviously, and two is they didn't feel they had the right resources, you know, lack of skilled resources to do that. And that's probably a more broader question for Malaysia Inc. is how do we upskill people to really get into this business around AI and broader technology.
So besides AI and tech, what are other key measures that organizations can take up to better protect themselves against fraud and economic crimes?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously the tried and true scheme is the whistleblower hotline. Mm. And as you may know, we run this survey every 2 years. So in 2018, we said, look, you know, the frauds that you identified, how many were identified by whistleblower or tip-off? And that was 42%, which is reasonable. But this year it was 14%. So there was a sharp decline in the number of frauds and corruption events that were identified through tip-off. And that, I think, is something that companies probably need to work on, because we see a lot of situations where a company says, yeah, we have a hotline and all the rest of it. And when you ask them, has it ever been used? They say no, because it goes wider than just putting in a hotline and having a policy. You have to have the right culture around it, so people are confident that they can speak up and without fear, and can speak up anonymously if necessary.
Now, this year in June, Section 17A of the MACC Act will be kicking in. Could you explain to us what impact that will have?
Yeah, that will have a significant impact for Malaysia as a whole, for what they term a commercial organisation. So essentially a cut and paste from the UK Bribery Act. And so the Act has been amended for this new Section 17A that brings in corporate liability. So what it says is if somebody in an organization, whether at the top or at the bottom, pays a bribe to another party in order to win business or retain business or get a business advantage, then the people at the top of the organization, the board members, management, are personally liable. And there's only one defense to that, and that is they didn't agree or take part in that bribe paying, and it's not all, but and they've put in adequate procedures, which is proper due diligence. And there's the government's issued some guidance on that. So it's not just having a program, that there's specific guidance as to what you can do. And this is what they call a strict liability offense. The prosecution, the MACC, when they prosecute on this, they don't have to show any fault on your behalf. They just have to show a bribe was paid and you didn't have the proper procedures in place.
Alex, thank you very much for speaking with us.
No worries. Have a good day.
You too. That was Alex Tan, forensics and risk leader at PwC Malaysia, talking about a report that came from PwC, which was the Global Economic Crime and Fraud Survey, and you know, specifically relating to our country. Basically, there's a ways more to go. So I, you know, would really be fascinated to hear from you guys about how you feel about how your company is doing on this, you know, whether or not there is that sense of openness within to talk about issues like this, because as Alex alluded to, culture is part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this message here from Nasir Malik.
It's a waste of airtime to discuss whether the PM has majority support or not, and the delay of the parliament sitting. Number one, Agong has wisely brushed aside Anwar JP Mahathir. Why expose Malaysia to their ding-dongs? Politics is a game. Of course, the Prime Minister would delay the parliament sitting. Well, why should we reactivate the circus? And finally, listen to Ambiga. Pakatan Harapan deserves to collapse. Do some reflection. Let's move on.
So that came through from Nasir Malik. And I think that is, I can see where that's coming from. But I also think that the reason why it's a valid conversation to have is because a lot of people have a lot of questions about it. And while you may feel that way, and I certainly understand that, I think there is a sense of exhaustion and a sense of let's just be done with this that creeps in. It's also valid, I think, to have a conversation about why it is that you might feel it's not right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back and talking about the past, I think for me, what's important is being able to use different benchmarks, right? Like using the Pakatan Harapan government as a benchmark, and then previously the then BN administration before GE14 also as a benchmark, and comparing it to today's times to see roughly, I guess, and to be able to get a gauge as to how this new government will and has been doing.
MI says, I totally do not agree with the way the present government came into being, but I think we should give them space to govern. For Pakatan, please stop jumping up and down. You guys betrayed the voters, led by Tun Dr. Mahathir. You tore the manifesto in the voters' faces and more. And I think, again, this is why we're talking about it. There are lots of feelings on both sides of the equation, and understandably so, I think.
Yeah, and you know, there is a point to be made about the, you know, all the statements before the new prime minister came in amongst Pakatan, the miscommunications, you know, there's something to be said about that, and it should be acknowledged.
You can let us know how you feel. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.